Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of the Mundane Festival Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lamberth. Today is Sunday, January 24th, 2021. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast listening apparatus. If you're really into this, if you're really into this thing, give it 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Let everybody know why you like it, because it leads me closer and closer to world domination. I'm a nicer guy than Jeff Bezos. I would give people insurance. I would donate money to get people insurance and things that they need to have a better life. And then it would also lead me closer and closer into the popular zeitgeist. So Google and Botha Raw would know who I am, think I'm like charming and funny. And I think I kind of would have a chance with her if she knew who I was. Because she posted one of those corny ass Bernie Sanders memes when he's sitting in the chair with the mittens and shit. She posted one of those on her Instagram stories. And I'm thinking, I'm funny enough to probably make her like fall in love with me, possibly. So if you're into that, you can subscribe to my Patreon. $3. You get at least 2. Bonus episodes a month, and you support the podcast and you bring really talented people into the this mundane festival universe. And I put it right back into the show. So like this, the money that people contribute to Patreon goes right into the show. It goes into paying for Zoom, microphone, equipment, all this stuff. So I really appreciate everybody that has subscribed to Patreon and keeping this thing afloat. I really appreciate it. This is episode 481. I have two super special return guests, comedians Neil Charles and Jim Search from the Swatches and Boomboxes podcast. I'm going to share that conversation that I had with them, with you, in a bit. Right now, I just want to talk to you for a few moments. We got a new president. Joe Biden was inaugurated on Wednesday. We got a new VP, Kamala Harris. That was cool. I was doing my TPS reports on my couch and watching the proceedings. It was really cool. It was really nice. It's definitely, I think people are feeling a lot happier now. There's a especially Dr. Fauci. Somebody took did a meme of him. No, just did a video of him addressing the press. I think maybe Wednesday or Thursday, and they had him come walking to the podium, taking his mask off, and they slowed it down and played Return of the Mac, and he was just so happy, and because we got a real president in the office, a new regime. So I'm hoping that things get better Joe Biden and his team can undo a lot of the bullshit that we've been going through for the past 4 years. And it's going to be a slow process because the government works that way. But I hope that people will see things change for them sooner rather than later. RIP to Larry King, who passed away. RIP to the great Hank Aaron, who not only was a record-breaking athlete, a great humanitarian, had to deal with all that bullshit while he was playing for really breaking a secret black man's home run record. Nobody's talking about that, but that's what I talk about on this podcast. That's what I bring up. I'm just giving you I don't know, little tidbits that'll just blow. I don't know what you say that is. That's a conspiracy. He might be black. Babe Ruth might have been black. But RIP to the great Hank Aaron. Just losing people, man. It's just fucking sucks. What else? I'm post omelet. I woke up this morning, rode on the exercise bike, had a omelet. I think I need a new pan, because my omelets aren't flipping like they used to, and I don't know what I'm doing wrong. Somebody please tweet me or write me in. The omelets are tasting great. They just don't have any uniformity. Shout out to the comedian Michael Way, who is constantly, I'm jealous of his Instagram. I think I talked about this when Andy and Randolph were on the show a couple weeks back, when we were talking about food or something, but Michael Way, his omelets are pristine. You don't even see that shit in the restaurants. Remember when you can go to the restaurants? Well, some people are going no matter what, but you sit down and you get this perfect omelet. They look great. My omelets taste really good. It's just been hit or miss with the flippage and everything sticking together. But I did have a very great omelet. I had some leftover brisket, some green peppers, some red onions, and some spinach, and some Mexican cheese. Not racist. That's what Stu Leonard calls it. Unless, like, people would think that would be racist, the way I think some of the products at Trader Joe's are. I don't know. I think I need a new pan. I think I'm now in the market for a good non-stick pan to make omelets in. That's how deep this podcast is. I'm in the before I get to Neil and Jim, I want to read an email. I got an email from a listener. This email is from Ka, and he writes, he says, "Hey, Chris, first of all, I want to say don't quit doing the podcast." 3! I think it's 3 or 4 exclamation points. "Second of all, is there any chance you can get Katie Compa back on? She was fantastic. I follow her on Twitter, and she remains a great follow. Third, what are you playing right now? Still going for achievements on TLU 2? Thanks, Ka." Well, Ka, I don't think I'll quit the podcast anytime soon. Maybe you're just catching up, but I think, you know, when you start an endeavor like this that I did almost 8 years ago, I think it'll be 8 years in March. You have your ups and your downs. And I feel like quitting this fucking thing every week. But then I think about the people, the small but mighty number of people that contribute to this show via Patreon. And it makes me feel good. And it makes me feel like you guys really care about what I'm doing. And I really enjoy doing this and talking to the people that I've gotten to talk to for the past 8 years. And I think always have, like, "Oh, I want to quit. I'm not making as much money as the right wing Patreon people. Or my friends make more," you know. So, and then sometimes people when you ask them to do a podcast, they're like, "Is this going to be on your Patreon? Because you don't have that many you don't have any followers." I know that's what they're fucking alluding to, but it's like you're getting quality shit. You're going to have a good time talking to me, and the people that listen to you on the show are going to fucking have a good time. You know, it's fine. That, you know, whatever. I don't think I'm going to quit anytime soon. Second of all, is there a chance you can get Katie Compa back on? Katie will actually be on the show very soon. I recorded a conversation with Katie about a week or so ago. And that's going to come up soon. So you will get that Katie Compa episode. It's locked and loaded. And we had a great conversation. I at least like to get a person of her caliber on at least once a year, if I'm lucky. Third, what am I playing right now? Still going for achievements on TLU 2. I haven't picked up TLU 2 in about a month or so. I platinumed it, but then part of me wants to go back to the permadeath, where you get through the game without dying. Permadeath works where if you die, you start back at you start over at the beginning of the level or the checkpoint or something like that. And I think, shout out to the homie Tajay, he was he did beat it that way, and I think another guy, Dom the Bomb, did it. But I think it's a way that you do it to some. There's a level where you can, like, if you're all the way towards the end of the game and you die, you start over. I'm not doing that shit. That game is too stressful for that. But what I have been doing recently, the last times that I played it, I did like unlimited ammo and put it on Survivor and just did these like different encounters and just kind of had fun in that way. But I haven't played it that in a while. I did buy Miles Morales, Spider-Man Miles Morales. And I beat that last weekend. I started playing it on Saturday. I think I may have gotten like halfway through. And then on Sunday, I just, this past weekend, last week, I beat it. So it was really just two sittings, two hardcore sittings, just beating the story mode. And it's pretty short. Like I've said, and you'll hear me talk about it in this episode with Neil and Jim, to where, like, even though I'm still, like, I was just kind of like, maybe I don't need to play it right away because it's just going to be like part one, but shorter. It's going to be like an Uncharted Lost Legacy, even though Uncharted Lost Legacy was fucking fantastic. So I really loved Miles Morales. It's terrific. And it was cool because it was a story. It was people of color. it was a diverse game. And it was compelling. I thought it was emotionally compelling. And it doesn't really take that much. Not to say that I'm easy, but I mean, The Last of Us was fucking heavy. That was like a television series. But Miles Morales in the comic book world, you know, it was really fun. I thought the characters were good. You know, and it was a compelling story. So I may, just to play around, try to go back to New Game Plus and then get some more achievements. I was popping some trophies pretty good with that one. So that's what I've been playing. I need to get back to Control. I keep talking about it. It's just kind of become a chore in a lot of ways. And I think it's partly because I don't really understand upgrading the weapons. God of War was kind of like that, too. It's not just like a skill tree with, like, The Last of Us is a skill tree. Tomb Raider had a skill tree. God of War did have a skill tree, but then the way the plus and minuses of adding armor and all that stuff, it's kind of confusing. To me, it was. So I don't know, but I will get into it. I'm looking for a PlayStation 5. I keep getting these drops and I keep missing out. I was kind of close. Randomly, I just looked at my phone on, I think, Tuesday or Wednesday, and it was a drop going on at Best Buy, and I got kind of close, but then I don't think my app wasn't on. Well, the way that I was connecting to it was via like the web, and I should have had my app open with my password. I should have been logged into the app, the Best Buy app, but whatever. Hopefully within another month or so, I'll get it. I would like to get one before this new game Returnal comes out. It's right up my alley. It's this woman. It's about a broad who's like an astronaut or something. And she gets trapped on this planet and she's trying to figure out how to get out. And she's there by herself. And it's a third person game and she's got unlocking some past. It's weird and interesting. It looks like something that I would just love and get engrossed in. So that's the next game I hope would like to play. It comes out in March. So Ka, thank you so much for being a Patreon subscriber and sending me an email. I really appreciate that. Thank you so much. Katie will be coming up soon. Okay. I want to get you to Neil and Jim. So Neil and Jim have a terrific hip hop podcast called Swatches and Boomboxes. And I wanted to have them on initially just to talk about the death of MF Doom and what that means to hip hop. And we did talk about that. But then this was recorded the week of the insurrection, the attack on the Capitol. So this was a couple weeks ago. And like I've said before, you know, this podcast isn't ever, it's not like an evergreen podcast, but this is at the time, this is when we recorded it. I'm being upfront, I'm breaking the fourth wall. And we talked for about 45 minutes or so, about the attack, and we gave our thoughts on it. And then we talked a little bit about hip hop and what we were listening to and all of that good stuff. So I think it's still a conversation that's really good. I think you'll enjoy it. I think you'll laugh. I think you'll get some insight on what these brothers think about it. And, I think that's it. So yeah. If you want to be cool like Ka, subscribe to Patreon. You can email the show, mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com. And I think that's it. Let's get you to my buddies, Neil and Jim. Hope you enjoy it, folks.
All right.
So I feel like you guys kind of got me, leave me out here hanging like I'm an alcoholic. Neil's been sober for 6 years. Jim is on dry January, and I specifically bought some fancy schmancy IPAs, craft beers from Vermont, and I said I'm gonna try it. The cans look really cool, and I'm just gonna fucking give them a go.
That's Chris top shelf Lambert right there.
I get, I'm not much of a drinker, but like, you know, what's been fun. And I think Jim kind of set it off because when COVID hit, we used to do a couple like little Zoom meetings just to catch up and shoot the shit. And yeah. We poured up a couple times. So I was like, oh, this is cool. And so every now and like I did drunk back Black History. I overdid it.
That was fun.
That was a lot of fun. And then so sporadically if I have somebody on to shoot the shit with, I'll crack one open. So much for that. I'll do it. I'll drink.
Yo, I don't let it slow you down, man. Look, if we would have recorded this last month, I would have been right on board, man.
Okay.
January, I gotta, especially after this fucking holiday season, man, I gotta slow down right now, dude.
Yeah, I feel you. No, I'm working on that too, like just in general. I gotta ask you, I thought about you this morning, Jim, because I was at Wegmans.
Mm-hmm.
And it was it had to be about 6:30. I was looking for these craft beers, and I actually 6:30 a.m. I found two of them, but then they had this special edition craft beer. And they had it. I bought it. I was like, let me just try it. Why not? And I couldn't get it because they don't sell alcohol until after 8 in New York. Is that statewide?
Yeah. I want to say that is. So wait, you went to the Wegmans in Brooklyn?
Harrison.
Oh,
OK. I work in Westchester.
Oh, got it. Okay. But yeah, no, that is. I mean, in upstate New York, that's pretty much the norm, is that you can't buy before 10. And I want to say on Sundays before noon.
Yeah.
Is the standard fare. But I'm glad you're supporting an upstate institution like Wegmans.
We talked about it the last time you were on. It's one of the best grocery stores on the East Coast. Neil, we talked a little bit before we started. L.A., what is it like, even though we talked about it a little before, but just expound on what you were telling me before we started.
Okay. What we were talking about was, we were talking about the situation in LA, and the spotlight is on us because we're out of ICU beds, as much of the country knows. And it's to the point where I'll just say this. Obviously COVID is horrible. It's a terrible thing. But there are people also suffering from other health conditions. Like, you know, you might have like, you know, a heart issue or a blood issue or something like that. And those people aren't getting the space in hospitals because of all the people that are sick with COVID. So we're out of ICU beds. So now they've started up like setting up tents and things like that. Like, they reopened a defunct hospital in order to have more space for patients. And it's really getting out of control. And then at the same time, the police are shutting down parties. People are going out and partying and having these super spreader events. Mm-hmm. And it's completely wild. It's like, this is still a pandemic. It's 2021, sure, but the virus is still here.
Right, right. It was so funny. Yeah. My favorite show recently has been Power, the book two of Ghost. And it's just been like, at first I was skeptical, but then 15 minutes in to the show, I was locked in. I love the show. I stumbled upon the kid that plays Tariq, Michael Rainey Jr. He's a young actor. I don't know if you guys watch the show, but the lead of Power Book Two, young kid about in his early 20s. He flew to L.A. He's fucking partying. It's just like nothing's going on. It's just like he is wilding. Like these kids are like, it's like, what are you doing?
Right.
Yeah, right. Man.
No masks. Yeah, it's a lot. I went to a Zoom wedding. Like,
okay,
my wife's cousin got married, and that was broadcasted on Zoom.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the best that we could do without actually being there.
Sure.
So I felt like we did our part. But there were people at that wedding, some with masks and some without.
Yeah. It's so weird. It's just like watching the NBA draft, and it's like, oh my God, these are little super spreader events, even though like most of them are like, you know, remote, but like it's been a weird year. It's almost, we're almost at a year, like I guess in March when everything shut down.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I don't know. Like I just saw before we started, Cuomo is opening up the vaccine distribution to seniors and anybody that can. I was trying to remember what that was.
It's like seniors, teachers. I can tell you who else.
Essential workers. Oh, people over 75 and essential workers could schedule vaccines as soon as Monday after criticism over sluggish rollout. That's just like the blurb from the New York Times as we're recording. Yeah. Yeah, it seems like we're starting to get things. What's your reaction? What are you guys' reactions from the storming of the Capitol building?
Yo, all right, I got some thoughts.
Yeah.
I have some things to expound on with that. Well, first, you know, I will say, like, I'll go through like the range of emotion, right? At first, like, yeah, I was definitely like scared because it's like, yo, man, I've never in my questionable number of years I've been alive, I have never seen this happen, right?
Right.
Like, and this is like, I've never seen this level of terrorism succeed so well, right? Mm-hmm. And live, right? Like, I lived through 9/11, like, or let me rewind. I've never seen domestic terrorism move like this.
Yeah.
Foreign terrorism I've seen, right? Like, I was alive for 9/11. I watched the towers fall, you know, I kind of came together. I'm just like, wow, that was someone outside of the country who did it. Mm-hmm. But I've never seen like this level of inside job happen so swiftly, right? And then, so like the fear, I think, kind of gave way to like morbid curiosity, because I'm like, oh, the whites are now fighting the whites. Like, this is like white on white crime. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, there is not much that black and brown folks have to do with this shit, right? Because it's like, you got some angry Trump supporters going into the government, which is white as fuck, and they are just having it out. And the final thought I'll say, and this is more anecdotal than anything, but the day it was happening, I went to go meet a friend, and responsibly, and I was talking to him and I was like, hey man, are you watching the news? He's like, yeah, why? What's up? And I'm like, dude, the Trump supporters are like breaking into the Capitol building. And he goes, Jim, I'm from Peru. I see coups all the time. Mm. You're in a coup. That's what it is. Like, it happens in my country a lot. And this is a third world country now. So they gave people guns. You said it was okay. So now you got a coup. So I was like, wow.
It's a hell of a point.
And but just he was so just matter of fact. It was just like, yeah, like this happens when you have a dictator. Like this happens when you piss off someone who has no control. Like, there you go. So it went from fear to morbid curiosity to like, that's a funny bit. Hmm. So that was the story of when Jim found out that the government was falling apart.
Wow. How about you, Neil?
Well, for me, I was quarantined as at home as I have been for since the beginning of this, pretty much. So I'm watching this and it was kind of along the same lines as Jim. I was watching All Lives Matter versus Blue Lives.
Wow.
And it was
that's real.
It was interesting because, you know, I'm glad you call it terrorism because that's exactly what it is. It's terrorism and it's treason.
Yeah.
Under the guise of patriotism.
Mm-hmm.
Because these people came out with American flags and Trump flags and Confederate flags.
Yep.
And acted like we're doing this for America, for patriotism, but they were actually committing a crime.
Well, and that's the thing, if I could just jump in super quick, that differentiated this from like the idea that they're freedom fighters and they're fighting for this country is like, well, you're not. You're fighting for Donald Trump. Like, that's the difference between these two things. Like,
yep.
I was watching CNN and Cory Booker was talking about it, how like there's only been two times in American history where someone has stormed the Capitol, the War of 1812 and today.
Yep.
That's it. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And in both of those instances, the people that were invading the Capitol were waving a flag, not for a country, but for a person. They were doing it on behalf. They were doing it on behalf of a king, and they're now doing it on behalf of the WWE Hall of Famer Donald Trump. He is.
Yeah.
Look it up, man. He's a
Hall of Famer. Yeah.
So that's, I guess, the distinction. And then, like, the other point he added, which I thought was very spot on, is that like the War of 1812 wasn't America's fault. That was like. That was a foreign invader that came and did it. Wasn't our fault. This one we did to ourselves.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. We brought this on ourselves. We've had so many opportunities to shut him down, and they aided and abetted him to the point where, like, yeah, he fucking incited a riot. I mean, they're looking at insurrection. Like, I mean, again, I have never in the history of Jim Searchdom ever fucking seen this. So,
yeah. It was really weird, man. It was, and we kind of had the previews for it in Michigan trying to kidnap the governor, in Wisconsin storming the state. Was it the state building? The whatever they're, oh my God. You know what I'm talking about when they stormed in Wisconsin. All those guys with long guns and everything.
Yeah.
They've been doing it. And I was listening to a podcast. Somebody said, where's the rubber bullets at least?
Yep.
You know, we obviously as black dudes know that if more of them looked like us, there would be this, you know, people would be dead.
100%.
It'd be carnage. There is only one person of interest during this whole Capitol raid, and it was the one black guy that was there. They are only looking at him. Nobody else is being targeted, but it's just him. He masterminded. That's the Antifa. That's the guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, but to your point,
yeah, it's crazy, man. It's nothing. it's almost like I'm not going to say that I'm not surprised, but it was just it made me angry. It made me sad. It's just like, you know, just because, you know, a black dude won the presidency.
That's
four
it.
Four years ago.
That's the only reason that this happened, by the way.
Do you guys feel like you're separating yourselves a lot from, like, maybe your white counterparts or just white people that you thought were friends? Or it just seems like people, when we're going to get into hip hop, but it's just like, you seem like, but we got to talk about, we just talk about we what's have, going on.
Yo, oh, man.
Yeah, we got to talk about it. But it just seems, because it just feels like with the last, even when Obama was in office, I would get these texts from friends texting me, my black friend comedians, saying, hey, what's up with these people on this podcast? Like, did you hear this episode? The way that they're talking, the way that they're feeling like they're, you know, oh, you know, they're black people are getting on because of diversity. Like, I feel like I've been talking about that for a long time. And then I just feel myself just like slowly separating myself from these people. And I don't want to, I don't want to be that way, but I don't want to be a coon either. So I choose the first option, you know. What about, how do you guys feel about that? Do you find yourself in those, like, in these, I don't necessarily think they're precarious situations, but do you just, are you finding yourself, oh, I thought this guy was down, but now they're showing true colors?
You know.
Or girl.
You know, it's interesting. I feel like there's two splits in my life of answering this. Like, there's the comedian world that I'm in, and then there's like the, I hate saying civilian, because like,
no, that's a it's a common terminology. I get
it. I gotta go with it. So like the civilian aspect of my life. So I'll truncate both of them as much as I can. But it's like, look, on the comedy side, it's like, look, man, I've known that there are these racist motherfuckers that have been in this game as long as I've done it, right?
Yeah.
And, like, you know, have I distanced myself from them? Yeah, I have. Because it's like, look, first of all, you're not going to ruin my career if, like, I don't fuck with you. Because, like, were you giving me an opportunity before this? Like, come on, man. Like, you're not doing me any favors by me not, like, fucking with you. And also, like, yeah, I mean, there is a measure of, like, accountability. It's like, you know, hey, I don't want to, like, play the game. Well, I don't want to say that, right? Like, we all, this is a game, right? We all have to play it, et cetera. But I feel like there's varying degrees at which one wants to play it. And I feel like mine has moved so far. Like, my patience of playing it is nil, right? Like, you post some racist shit, I'm like, well, all right, I don't fuck with you, right? Mm-hmm. And, but, however, like, I'm not gonna, like, run up in your timeline and be like, you're a fucking bigot. Like,
yeah.
I mean, look, I just won't talk to you and I just won't fuck with you, right? So, right. Like, that's kind of where I am on the comedian side. On the civilian side, however, you know, I've made it abundantly clear to a lot of my white friends. I've cut some off, right?
Yeah.
Because I've just been like, oh, you're a racist. Like, and they're like, but I'm like, no, like, that's the deal. Like, you've said and done X. That's what you are, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and then I'll shut my dumb head up. but, I've certainly had the conversation with friends of just like, look, if you are friends with people who voted for Donald Trump, you have to pick. It's me or them. Because you have to decide, is your friendship of however many years more important than my humanity? You make that decision.
I think I remember seeing a Facebook post of yours that was similar to what you just said. Yeah, not too long ago.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I posted a couple of it, of those, like, friends where it's like, you know, yeah, it said something like, me, racism is bad, also me, but not bad enough for me to make a serious sacrifice.
Yeah. It's not a deal breaker. It's never been a deal breaker for them. It's nope. always like I saw somebody on Facebook yesterday, one of our mutual colleagues say, you know, one was like two of our colleagues. One was like, I don't feel sorry for who these were both white women. One mm-hmm. made this post and said, you know, I really don't feel sorry for that woman getting killed. And, you know, she should not have been there. This should have never happened. And then there was another white woman who I consider and who I believe that you would both consider when I tell you off mic, because I'm not going to, I ain't going to do that on here on live, but like say like, oh, well, I feel sorry for her because she's a woman. And it's just like,
I saw that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I saw that and I immediately know who that is because that was a WTF moment for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I was like, what?
Yeah, because she was like, you know, that woman, you know, she died. And if it was a man, then everyone would have been more upset and they would have been fighting each other and blah, 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 blah. So I was like, so right now you've assigned a value, like you're trying to say that no one valued her life as a woman, not as someone committing a crime.
Right.
Because I've watched that particular video from many different angles, right? And it's almost incredible that that went down. And I also, today, I watched the video leading up to it happening.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was moments before that incident happened. Now, I'm never happy when someone dies, right?
Right, right.
But I'm not going to lie to you, I'm pretty indifferent about this one. And the reason why is because she went through a window. Right? That they knocked the window out. It was broken. It was a broken window. They barricaded it, right? And there were officers on the other side of that window with guns drawn. And before it happened, someone said, hey, there's someone with a gun right there. And this is a trained officer with a gun. Now, no one made a move, but she decides to go through said window head first.
Sorry.
It's kind of like, how can you not, you know, be staring at the great beyond and anticipate death? I don't understand. No. That's some strong privilege right there. Like she was like, well, maybe since I'm, you know, a white woman, mm-hmm. maybe they won't shoot me, even but though they're trained.
But Neil, she was in the Air Force.
Which means she should have known better. Like, you have combat training. You would already know that you don't go through a door without a breach or a smoke bomb, at least, or anything.
Yeah. I mean,
a thug, man. It was a thug.
It's wild. Yep. It's wild, man. And it's just to see that exchange, it was just like, yo, really? This is what and you got out of it?
She was committing a crime. Yeah. And I posted something and I said, I wonder if she woke up thinking that she was actually going to give her life for Donald Trump when she woke up this morning.
I thought about that.
That's what happened. Because there were a few people that did not come home that day because they went out there and did that. And they were committing crimes. And, you know, I'm indifferent. I'm different because they were committing crimes. That's treason, and that was terrorism.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, it was.
It's like, there's not an ounce of sympathy I have for that woman. I don't, because to just see, like, the fucking conflation, like, I saw someone, like, well, I'm not even going to say her name, because I don't want to even fucking give her that light.
Right.
Necessarily, but like I saw someone like co-opted like Sandra Bland, say her name, Breonna.
Oh yeah.
And I'm like, oh, you mean like these people, like Breonna Taylor, who was asleep when she got killed?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And like Sandra Bland, who, like, by the way, was pulled over by the police, which doesn't mean that you should die. Like, you, like, that's not a death sentence. But somehow they're in the same strata as this woman who hopped up on Mountain Dew 5-Hour Energy and beef jerky decided to fucking.
Yo, her grandfather even said, like, you know, she, because I had to rewind that shit too. Like, they talked about her grandfather was like, yeah, for some reason she was really into, she was really into Donald Trump for some reason. And he was kind of like, he was sad that she was dead, but he was just like, he didn't have to say for some reason.
Yeah, we know what the reason is. And that this is what bothers me about the whole thing, is that all these different hate groups are aligned with Donald Trump, right?
Right.
Right.
But no one comes out and says, I like him because of racism. Like, no one says it.
Yeah.
No one will outwardly say it. And he won't condemn it, but it's there.
Mm-hmm. Well,
it's but there. It has to be the reason. It has to be the reason. It has to.
You know, I mean, that's the thing, right? Is like, well, I think there's a couple points to that point of just like, no one outwardly says, like, I am a racist, I am a bigot.
Right.
Because, like, and maybe it's naivete, whatever, but it's like, in the 21st century, like, it is not socially acceptable to overtly say I am a racist, right?
Right.
which is why, like, and of course, like, I mean, there's so much that goes into that sort of
right.
Like, that's one part of it. And the other part is that racism is so baked in the cake of all of this that, trust me, there is a large swath of people who are virulent racists who do not genuinely think they are racist.
Yep.
They just
it's all rooted in hate. Yeah. Like, look at the aggression that these people have shown, you know? And they talk about, like, I watched a video from, you know, the woman that died. I watched the video, and she was talking about all these different groups of people that are a problem. Mm-hmm. And was so aggressive, so hateful. And I was like, oh, this is right on brand for what's happening.
Because it gives them an out. It gives them an out to say, like, because this didn't work out, it's because of the blacks, it's because of the gays, it's because of Mexicans or whatever, instead of just kind of that self-reflection that, you know, we who are not civilians and we who are artists are constantly doing that and constantly trying to recalibrate ourselves. It's just not that's just an out for them. The reason why I'm in this situation is because of X. And yeah, it's really fucked up.
It's like, and also I think the other, another point to add to that, Chris, too, is like, could you imagine having, like, cause I mean, like, being white as a currency, right? Like, that is probably like one of the best pieces that you can have. It won't fix everything, right? It's not it's not going to get you out of everything, but it will certainly get you out of a lot, right? Mm-hmm. To imagine to have that at your disposal, but yet still fuck it up.
Yeah.
Like,
you fucking up your superpower. It's like every comic says that. It's like you fucking up your superpower. And it's almost like you could just say, I'm white. If I was really racist, if I was racist like that, if I was white, I wouldn't be at that motherfucker. I'd be like, I'll be all right.
Yeah.
It'll be okay. Biden, you know, whatever.
But that's, you know, and that's, and, you know, to that point too, right? I mean, this is all good stuff right here. I love this. Yeah. is that, like, that's why you don't, if you're superior, you really don't have to yell it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
If you're so much better than so many people, you sure screaming to who are you convincing?
Right. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, it's like that old adage, like, a farmer doesn't argue with a pig if its breath smells like shit.
I've never heard that, but that's okay.
Me neither. That's the first.
Is that a Binghamton phrase?
It's like a Binghamton Midwest colloquialism, you know.
I like it. I just never heard that before.
It's very apt, man. There's a lot of shit breath people out there who are like, I'm a pig, and it's like,
yeah.
Well, I'm not gonna argue with you on that.
Yeah, it's it's one of those things. It's just like you, because I didn't know how to feel. Like Neil said, like I kind of feel indifferent about it. But it's just like, yo, whether I agree or don't agree, because I've said this for years, politics is like pro wrestling. Mm-hmm. Democrat, whether you're Democrat or Republican, it's like those motherfuckers are still rich. Those lawmakers are rich. They might argue on issues, but they'll, after they're done, they go get a steak dinner together.
They're
kicking it.
Mitch McConnell and Joe Biden have been friends for 30 years.
Yeah, they work together.
Yeah, they're friends, man. And, you know, what's interesting, though, is that, like, yes, they are. And this is where I think, and we'll see how this plays out, mm-hmm. is it's almost like I think of like the attack on the Capitol akin to like the drug epidemic. Right. Like when these Trumpers were running the streets and harassing marginalized people, they didn't care. Right. Like the government really didn't give a fuck. Hence, like the crack epidemic. If it's in the hood, I don't care. It's out of my fucking purview. Well, the Capitol building is the opioid crisis because now it's in your world. Now those Trump motherfuckers broke into the Capitol building. Well, Democrat, Republican, they didn't give a fuck.
Yeah.
Someone said, like, I was just watching before we got on, one of those dudes who broke in was just like, I'm going to kill Mike Pence. He said that. And it's like, yo, like, y'all can't, well, first of all, you fucking say that shit. You fuck with the government.
Yeah.
And now you're seeing it. They are seeing you fucked with the government in their house.
Yeah.
You went into fucking Nancy Pelosi's office.
Yep.
It's insane.
And you got to look at the arrogance of it, because there was no attempt to distort any identity. People were taking selfies like, yeah, this is me doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, that's evidence. Like all of these people been fingered. Like people were like, oh, that's so-and-so from this state. That's so-and-so from this state. And all these people were just being ID'd.
It was like they got tickets. They made plans to do this. They went. They were at the hotel the next day, kicking it.
Did you see the guy that went down there wearing his work ID?
No, I didn't.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Speak on it.
He was wearing his work ID while rioting, and someone was like, "Wait a minute. Isn't that your company logo?" And they issued a statement, like it was either today or yesterday. It was like, we do not agree with individuals participating in these type of events while employed for us.
Mm-hmm.
So not only is that man definitely losing his job, but the FBI will also be at his door.
That's crazy, man. And what was he thinking?
He was white.
They weren't. And that's why you have to laugh at so much of this, right? Is that like there was no manifesto when they got in there. There was no leader that was like, all right, we're going to get in here and we're going to like make some demands, right? This was, all right, now we're in here. Now what? It was like the movie Very Bad Things. Like they're covering this up and they're like, what should we do now? Oh, I don't know. I guess we'll just get into the building. Okay, now what? Take pictures? Let's do that. Right? Like I'm telling you, and this is the other thing, too, that's fucking hilarious about it, is that, like, the plan, if there was a plan, right, one could say the plan was to stop the certification of Joe Biden, right? Didn't happen.
Nope.
Right. Like,
and that was, you know, I hate to really give the government the props here, but it was just like, well, they did the thing that you do in the face of terrorism is, as you say, what you tried to accomplish, you didn't do. Your goal, if there was, I can only put this together now as I'm saying out loud, the goal was to stop the certification and scare the government into being like, well, we're going to keep Donald Trump as president. Well, it didn't work. They stayed up all night. They did it. And they said, fuck you guys. Like, this is the government. Like, yeah. This is what we do. Someone won the election. And look, for God's sakes, we are now at a point where fucking Mike Pence and Mitch McConnell and fucking Lindsey Graham are heroes.
Fuck that. Yeah.
Like, that's...
Like, we know you can't, like, I like when Betsy, I tweeted this, guys, yesterday when Betsy DeVos resigned. I said, yo, that's just as disingenuous as Shaggy saying it wasn't me. Like, we saw you right. on the camera. We saw you. We saw everything you did. Like, we know, you're not right. going to erase that shit.
Yep. We know who you are, man. Like, you have aided and embedded this for 3 years. However many months and however many days, like,
yeah.
And now 13 days in, like, this was the flashpoint where you're like, man, this guy, ooh, I don't know. Like, you weren't there right. when he said that there's good Nazis. You weren't yeah. there when he tried to build a wall to keep Mexicans out, like yep. a Muslim ban. That's chill. Like,
yeah.
Yo, come on, man. Y'all are.
And when Donald Trump told them to go home and was like, you're all special people.
We love you.
Yes. Yeah, we
like
love
was,
you.
Like it was peacefully romper room. Go home.
You know what I'm saying? And notice he wasn't anywhere near there. He wasn't anywhere near. No.
He was not.
Nope.
He sure wasn't. And, you know, look, neither was Rudy Giuliani or fucking Eric Trump. They, in fact, there's video of them driving the opposite direction of the Capitol.
That's hilarious.
And what I also heard, and I don't know how true this is, but I heard.
Well, let's make it true tonight. Fuck it.
Okay. All right. I heard that the FBI has all of, you know, the pictures and the video of those events from what happened. And they're just compiling everything as, you know, obviously evidence so that after he is out of office, all of those people implicated are going to jail.
Do you think they are? Slow, do you think they're really going to do it, though?
But this is only what I heard. And I was like, I heard they're slowing the process so that the president can't, you know, prepare these pre-prepared, like prepaid phone cards of pardons that he's just going to hand out.
Yeah, like how is he pardoning these certain people when they haven't been charged with anything?
Look, he's working on pardoning like his kids,
yeah,
and his friends at this moment. He doesn't have the wingspan to cover everyone.
Well, my understanding of it is that like I become a pundit as like anyone who wants to survive at this point is just like here's how the government works. Even though like you know it's all CNN talking points, but
you're a teacher though. You would know more than the average person.
You'd be surprised. No, it is a noble profession, and anyone who does it is amazing. But what I was going to say is that like you technically can start pardoning people as soon as the offense occurs. You don't have to be charged yet. Like he could say like, "Oh, I'm going to pardon this person. I'm going to pardon that person." I do think, and I think one. Reason why I think we might see impeachment and a conviction of Trump is that like if you are impeached and convicted, you can no longer run for office.
Right.
You're no longer allowed to hold office in the United States of America. So like, hey, if you are labeled as a enemy of the state, that really shoots your chances of running in 2024.
Yeah.
So and you know good and hell well that like he'll run again. If he's allowed to, he will absolutely run again. There's no
They're doubt. Like, maybe we can get him in somewhere else. Like, maybe we can get him in as a senator or a governor. Like, they're shopping different ideas. And I'm like, all of you people are insane. You're absolutely insane.
They're all Hydra. They're all fucked up. It's so crazy, man. It's I'll never forgive our country for this, man. It should have been Hillary.
It really should have.
She said she should have never apologized for calling them deplorable. She should have never apologized, man.
And I mean, it's like, it is, this is like the, I mean, not that this is the one moment, but it's just like easily in the top three of just absolute deplorable behavior. Like, mm-hmm. you are going to storm a federal building in an effort to undermine an election. Like, how, fuck, look, I'm not the hugest fan of the government or America, et cetera, but it's just like, you guys are, that's some real trash shit to do. And also, like, to think that, how successful do you think you're going to be? Like, you are going up against the most resourced, staffed army that fucking exists, right?
Right.
Like, now, I'll say this, is that they're very choosy, as we see, of how they employ these resources, right? Like, when it's Black Lives Matter, like, they will fucking do the best they can to murder them in the streets, right? What we're now seeing, and this is why you're seeing all these people getting fired and resigning from police positions in DC, is that now you brought it home. Mm-hmm. You started fucking with rich, powerful people in the government. A lot of them.
Right.
But not just like policy wise. Like, can you, like, I'm so like losing words, but like, can you imagine what it must have been like for them to be like, we could die today.
Yeah.
We could all die. They all had put on gas masks that they would keep underneath their seats, and they were moved into a fucking bunker because they thought they were going to die. Do you imagine the enemies you just made that day?
Yep.
Across the aisle. Like, of course you're going to fucking go down. They're going to fuck you up.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's being white, is like, you don't think that that's the fucking next recourse, because it's embedded in you to not be afraid of authority. So
no, it's white supremacy. It's that you feel that you own everything and everyone as your birthright.
Right.
Hey.
And everyone is less than you because you're you.
Mm-hmm. That's why those motherfuckers ran up in that building, man. And again, I watch it like reality TV right now, because I'm so like, I'm telling you, the last 48 hours have just been CNN. I'm just like, this is fucking
it's very unsettling.
It's unsettling. It is. It's just like, it's like, really, like, we're in a pandemic. We're like, I haven't seen my parents in a year. Like, I want to do stand up. I want to act. I want to do like all this. I want to hang out with friends. It's like, you want to do the things. It's like, I feel like I'm making these sacrifices so that we can do it on the other side of this, you know, right. And other people don't seem, it seems like, I live in Bergen County in New Jersey, and I was at Wegmans like right before we logged on. And it was just like, people were wearing masks. They were doing what they were supposed to be doing. They were, functioning. You can do this. Like, we can do this. And it's just like, that's some weak bullshit. That was everybody. Everybody in that Wegmans we were different cultures and shit. We were doing what we were supposed to do. And there were people working. I went to work today. I got up at 5 o'clock, 4:30 and shit, and went to work.
Yeah.
You know, we can function in this. And to have these people just like, you know, there's no ICU beds in Cali. There's no like, they may or may not open reopen the Javits Center to be a triage center or whatever. Like, it's just, you know, it's disheartening, man.
You know what? I'm right there with you, Chris. And I will say, though, that I've seen, and believe me, I'm not an anti-masker, believe it or not. Polo has put out several lines of masks that I've been excited about. And so, you know, they have a cause, and I respect it. But what I will say is that, like, it's in New York. They have made it so hard for small business, and they've made it so hard for restaurants, they made it so hard for bars, that, like, I don't, if I'm a bar and I'm like, I don't know what else to do. Like, you have created a situation where I'm going to close. You're not bailing me out. Like, right. And if you are bailing me out, you have put so many hoops in the way for me to do this that I may not get it in time. And it's like,
right.
Like, for example, like, and again, I'm certainly not rocking with this, but it's like, hey, you go outside of New York City, you go to bars in upstate New York, they are fucking rocking. Like,
they are?
I drove by there fucking filled, and I'm like, well, that's a fucking dangerous situation. But if I'm a bar owner, it's like, I don't know. I honestly, I mean, it's such a hard place that they put these businesses in.
Yeah.
And they're not providing any sort of, they're not providing an appropriate amount of relief.
Right. And that's why people are kicking it. You know, that's why they're like, fuck it. You know, it's just how many of these Facebook pictures do you have to see? Oh, it's not a real thing. It's not a real thing. And then you see their funeral. The next picture is they're dead.
I talked to a nurse about it. It was like 2 weeks ago. No, a month ago, sorry. Month ago, I was like, so, you know, how do you feel about what's going on right now? She goes, first wave, I felt bad. Second wave, like, you know what to do.
And there you go. And there you have it. Yeah.
And yet still you decide that this is not for you. And it's like, hey, I mean, you're taking the risk. Now, one thing I can say, though, is like, if I feel like, because we are, I know I have personally like the quarantine fatigue, and I'm just like, all right, I have to like see another human being.
Yeah. Right?
Like, I have to like interact with someone. I have to go meet up with friends. I have to go do something. Like, you know, I think that like, if you are doing it responsibly, like, I don't see a problem. Like, I really don't. Like, if you are socially distancing, if you're not having a fucking rager at your house, for God's sakes. But like, yeah, if you want to, like, I don't know, go over to a friend's house and like hang out, like, I don't see the, I don't know.
Yeah, I feel you, man. It's really hard to make those decisions and to do that stuff, like, cause that we are social beings. Now, I want to shift gears into why I wanted you guys on. I want to talk about hip hop, because you guys have a great podcast called Swatches and Boomboxes. I had the pleasure of being on there a couple times, and it's really a great format to just really be an old dude. and talk about yesteryear. So I really love doing that show, and I love what you guys are doing with it. But I wanted to talk about, you know, maybe just kind of get into it by talking about the death of MF Doom. And I said this on the episode that's currently posted. Just in my intro, I was just talking about MF Doom and how I'm not going to lie and say that I was the biggest fan of his. Mm-hmm. I just knew this, like, oh, this guy's dope. Like, he's dope. He can spit. He's one of those dudes that just could kind of, I'm not going to say he was the first guy, but he's one of those dudes that kind of, I felt like he birthed a lot of these MCs that would just rhyme over anything, any kind of weird beat, anything. Mm-hmm. He was just rapping over it with like just this amazing dexterity. And I kind of felt like when his death just made me feel like I was fucking sleeping. I was sleeping on this shit. I recognized his talent and I knew he was dope, and when I found out he died, I just immediately went to this Mos Def clip when he was Mos Def. Currently he's Yasiin Bey.
Yeah.
But he had this, like, it's like a 7 or 8 minute clip of him just talking about MF Doom's raps, and he said something like, he raps how I feel, like I feel weird, and he raps weird like how I feel weird, and he was just like gushing over this dude. And Mos Def, Yasiin Bey is in my top five. The last time I did your show, we talked about Black on Both Sides. It was just like, when one of your favorite MCs is gushing over a dude, you have to pay this guy respect, this guy, his respect. And it's, I just couldn't stop listening to MF Doom. And I'm leading you guys into this. But I just felt like, I was kind of fucking up in a way where it was like, I should have been more. And I felt like when Prince died, because I wasn't the biggest Prince fan, but I damn sure knew that he influenced all of the people that I love currently, and he kind of birthed them.
Right.
So what I want to ask you guys is, like, how did you, I think maybe a friend, maybe like 2003, somebody, I'm trying to think when the was the food came out, was that 03 or 04? Whenever it was, it was sort of like somebody exposed me to it. I was like, oh, this guy's crazy. This guy's dope. Just Neil, start off. Can you talk about what MF Doom meant to you? What he just talk about? Like, tell us how you feel about MF Doom.
Okay. So Food came out in 2004.
Okay. Yeah.
And, you know, it was a classic. Now, where do I start? First of all, I remember MF Doom when he was in KMD.
Okay, yeah.
And I really liked them back in, I want to say, like, the early 90s or so. Early 90s, late 80s, that was, like, when hip-hop was young and there wasn't really a lot of money in it. Like, there weren't any jets. You know what I mean? Like, nobody was driving really expensive cars except for Ice-T. But there wasn't, you know what I'm saying? Like, there wasn't really that much in it. And I feel like MF Doom, he kind of like, he still raps that way. You know what I mean? And he has this kind of demeanor. And I went on the Black Car podcast, which is an amazing, amazing, amazing podcast.
Man. The Black Card?
The Black Card podcast.
Okay.
Yeah, with Crystal Adams. So okay. If you're listening to this, yo, check her out. She's really dope.
Shout out to Crystal Adams.
Yep. And I talked about, and MF Doom, he kind of rapped like he was so good that he was bored. Mm-hmm. Like, he raps like he's like laying back in an armchair and he's saying the most incredible things with the greatest of ease.
Yeah.
Now, I found out about MF Doom through like one of my really good friends. And he was like, yo, you need to listen to this. And he played like a couple of tracks for me. And I was like, yo, this is crazy. Who is this? And he was like, yo, that's MF Doom. He's amazing. Doom is the best.
Yeah.
And I was like, nah, man, you're crazy. And then I listened to more things and I was like, yo, you're not lying. Like, this is out of control. And then over the years, I heard more and more things. And on our show, on Swatches and Boombox, we always say, who says that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, whenever someone has like a crazy line in hip hop where you're just like dumbfounded and you're just like, you know, you have your wow moment. But Doom does that every line, like every one or two lines. That's what he said. He's a very intelligent rapper. And he was pretty much the underground king.
Yeah. You know, because, go ahead.
No. I was going to say, because he's not like, you know, the person where you're going to see their video on MTV, or you're not going to see it like that, but it's out there. You'll find it on YouTube for sure. And everybody knows about him. And, you know, even his death, he's like a very mysterious guy. And even his death, I still kind of feel like there's enough mystery around that.
Yeah.
Where a piece of me wants him to just come back and be like, yeah, that was a lie. I'm still rhyming. Because that's the kind of guy he was. Like, and he'll say in his rhymes, like, you know, I'm a masked weirdo.
Mm-hmm. It's so funny, like on the way home, from work and Wegmans, I was listening to like Potholders. And he said this isn't the exact line, but he said rappers are like crabs in the barrel pass me the Old Bay. And I was like, God damn, what the fuck? You know what I mean? Like, I'm eating them. This album's called Food.
Yep.
I'm gonna eat them. Like, yeah, they're tearing each other down, but like, yo, I'm eating them all, so who gives a shit? Yep. And it's like, why did I wait till this guy died to just like really, I should be coming up. My walk on music
that was should
be fucking all caps. Like, what the fuck?
Oh, perfect.
That was, you know, one of the best. Yeah, we talked about that with Darren Patterson.
Mm.
Hoe Kicks was also on Food, and that was one of my favorite tracks of his, man. And he took that JJ Fad supersonic beat and twisted it.
Yeah. It's so, and he produced a lot of these records on that one, and it's just like, it like he fathered like Tyler the Creator, because I didn't make the distinction of like, what is it, like one beer, like Tyler rapped about, I don't know if it was it on Goblin. It wasn't on Goblin, it was like Bastard maybe. And I was like, oh, this beat's dope. I didn't associate, I was like, oh shit, that's what Tyler's like, he rapped over that. That like Joey Badass rapped over a one of these records on like one of his mixtapes, and it's just like these dudes like love this guy.
Yeah, there's a video where he comes in like Tyler and them are just like playing ping pong or something, and he just comes in and shakes their hand, and they're all fanning out.
Yeah,
about him, and then he's on stage rapping. And they're singing along and they're losing it. And, you know, he truly was your favorite rapper's favorite rapper.
It's insane to see, like, Mos Def, like, go 8 minutes to be like, oh, my God, I can't believe. And you know what connected with me when, and just as somebody who, like, just understood when Mos Def came, when he was Mos Def and he put out the Ecstatic, he was just kind of explaining what this album was. He's like, oh, this is a Doom record. This is like my like homage to MF Doom. And I was like, oh shit, I immediately got it. A couple of hooks. The songs aren't very long, you know, and it's like it's kind of like a hodgepodge. And he's rapping over all these things. And then he, you know, you go back to 2014 where he's doing this the Doom tribute, and it's like, okay, like I get it, but like I just kind of like, shame on me, you know, but at least he left behind all this well, great work.
You know, it's interesting. I was listening to a podcast about it, and they brought up how timeless his music is, that like, even if you are somebody who like was late to the game, late to the dance, you can jump in now and you're like, wow, this guy's fucking amazing. Right. Mm-hmm. You know? So like, I think that's what, I mean, there's so many, I mean, you could go for hours talking about how amazing he was as a rapper.
Yeah.
But like, you know, I think at least for me, like, you know, I was late to the dance. I didn't find out about Doom until like 2010, maybe 2011.
Okay.
And I remember, this guy Drew, shout out to you, Drew, if you're listening. Drew gave me, he like burned a couple CDs for me, and he was like, you gotta listen to this guy, you're gonna love him. Mm-hmm. And I was like, and I like kind of knew who he was, like I was a hip hop nerd, so I like knew who he was, but I just never was like, I'll get into him.
Yeah.
And then like I listened to Operation Doomsday, and I was just like, who the fuck is this human being? Right? You know? Because like, I mean, just the reference, like he's a genius. Right. If you listen to him, it's almost like, and I say this in that, like, it's like when you listen to like a Richard Pryor do stand up and you're like, how did you conceptually think this up?
Yeah.
Like, where did your brain go to get there? You know what I mean? Like, that was my first experiences with him. And then like, you know, I listened to Born Like This. And like that, you know, like I think every comedian has like the album they listen to when they write jokes. I listened to Born, like the first 2 years of stand up were listening to Born Like This. And that just really carried me, because I was just like, this guy's such a just artist. Like he is I think he's the definition of an artist, and like transcending the world of rap, and just like you listen to him talk and you listen to the references that he makes, and you know, he's such an impressive human being. And to hear his story of like, you know, I mean, he had a fucked up, you know, some fucked up shit happened to him, mm-hmm. and how he like persevered through that and recreated himself. And like, I mean, you know, I will go down as one of the top rappers to ever walk the planet. Like, you
know, absolutely. For me, one of my favorite songs was Gazillion Air.
Mm-hmm.
And if I may, Chris, may I read some lines?
Sure, sure.
From MF Doom, you know, in tribute to the late, great MF Doom. And I am in no way going to try to imitate his flow. But one of his verses goes, all right, and get ready for this, right? He goes, he gets lucky like winning free tickets off sickly lyrics. One man's waste is another man's soap. Son's fan base know the brother man's dope. A real weirdo with a bugged rear flow, and the way his hair grow was ugly as a scarecrow. He wears a mask so the charge won't grab on a rooftop with a large stone slab. Heads up, talk white and thought niggerish. Refused to walk tight and got his off the vigorish. Black licorice and equally as lucky. How he handled the money was strictly Dan Stuckey. Monkey hustle, man on fire. Later for the date than the Hadron Collider. And cost more, it be seeming like a style. Doom leave the competition steaming like a pile. Smile, ding, sparkling jewels. In effect, like alternate side of the street parking rules. Fools, the roach was never dead. Live for a week, then dehydrate with a severed head. Instead, it was depicted as flicked in. Split, the wick's lit. Can you dig it?
That was Neil Charles reciting Daniel Dumile's Gazillion Air. Yeah, man. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you know, again, so, like, in effect, like, alternate side of the street parking rules. Like, there's...
We know what that means.
And there, he's such a New York-centric human being, right? Like, he embodied so much of what the city is, you know?
Yeah.
I forgot what song it was on, but he said, you know, I don't give an F like report cards. And as a teacher, that stuck with me. You know, I know what you mean by that.
Yeah.
I know what you mean. And it's just, I mean, he was such a talent, man. And like, he existed in this, his own sort of universe, but was so inspiring to like, other rappers who didn't like, I feel like his respect was transcended so much that like from you look at like, you know, some of the hard street rap who fucked with Doom, like, I mean, Ghost and Doom, like where they were pretty inseparable in terms of like their music styles, and they had an album together and they collaborated a lot. So you have those sorts of situations. And then you have like a Tyler, the Creator, or Andre 3000, who's like, he's a fucking unreal human being. And there's a certain measure, and this is going to sound so fucking cliche, I know, but there's a certain measure of authenticity with how he rapped.
Yeah. Right?
Like, I think when you hear rappers, you know, they certainly have their bravado and they put on, they create a character. And obviously Doom was a character, like that is a persona that he had, but there was just this, like, there was a reality around it in that, like, he wasn't like, he didn't pretend to be somebody he wasn't. Like, you heard that come through in his music. You felt like, yo, this is a fucking weird dude who happens to be a fucking dope rapper. And like, And to your point, Neil, it reminds me a little bit of, like, he's so good that, like, yeah, I feel like in some instances he was bored at how good he was. Like, how, like, I feel like Sean Price is in that same layer of just, yeah, like, he's so good at this that, like, yeah, some, you hear on some shit and it's dope, but he's just like, oh, yeah, I can see that you're just, yeah, you know how good you are. Like, I think
they have a song together, too.
And yeah,
it was just bananas.
It's fucking wild, man. Like, they got to be up in heaven right now cooking up some fucking dope shit, man.
Like, yeah, Doom just had that unbelievable cult following. You know what I mean? Like, people that know about underground hip hop knew about Doom and mm-hmm. could recite his things. And I don't know, it was just, there were certain songs that just grabbed me where I was like, yo, I had to play that back and hear what he said. Mm-hmm. And yeah, he would say it with such confidence, like he knows he's great. Like, and hey, right? He's like, I only play the games that I win at mm-hmm. and stay the same with more rhymes. Then there's ways to skin cats.
Come on. Because
as a matter of fact, let me rephrase. With more rhymes, then there's ways to fillet felines these days. He literally said the same thing that he just said in a different way and made it rhyme.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable, now, Chris.
When he died the night we found out, New Year's Eve,
yeah,
Ninth Wonder kind of went off, like, he talking did. About like how, you know, it's nice that you guys are like celebrating him, but like you give him his flowers while he was here. You should have did right. that. How do you right. guys feel about that?
What, like giving the flowers while they're here?
Yeah, like buying the albums or like, you know, really giving this guy his due while he was here, you know. How do you feel about what Ninth Wonder, if you remember, you know, like what he was talking about?
I mean, I didn't really see the whole quote, but obviously from what you're saying, I understand. I'm just like, yo, how come you didn't fuck with him when he was alive? And, you know, make him a multi-platinum. I guess, I don't know, like, is it the question of, like, did you want him to, or, like, should we have supported him? Or those who just, like, kind of, like, jump on the bandwagon and just, like, yeah, support artists. It's like, yeah, I absolutely agree with that. You know, I think in a case like Doom, it's like, he's such a, like, there's so much of a mystery around how he even lived. Like, I, like, for all we know, he could have been a millionaire 100 times over and no one would know.
No,
yeah. You have no idea. Like,
right.
Or he could have, like, been a penniless pauper. Like, I feel like in this, like, I agree with that sentiment of just like, yeah, you should have fucked with him when you did. But then I also wonder of just like, was he just fucking rich on the low? And like, we would have never known.
Yeah.
We have no idea. I mean, there's something about death. I remember somebody said something where they were like, you know, when an artist dies, it kind of makes like the work that they did perfect.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, they're dead and you know that there's no more work coming. And then there's this whole thing where people die and on social media, everyone's like, oh, I love them and I was a fan, blah, 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 blah. But you should really appreciate those people, you know, while they were here, because they were here mm-hmm. and they were making good things. And, you know, let's not wait till people are not here anymore. Let's appreciate them now. Because I would go on Doom's website, gastrolls.com. I would go and I would look over stuff and I'd be like, man, I want a Doom hoodie. But I just don't think I could shell out that much money. I was like, I don't think I'm going to pay $70 after tax or something like that. It was something along those lines. It was at least $50 or more just for a hoodie that said Doom on it. Mm-hmm. And now every single thing on his website is sold out.
Yeah.
Well, every single thing.
It's like, you know, that saying, man, you're nobody till somebody kills you, right? Well, not in so many ways, right?
Yeah. Like, you know, but yeah, it's like when you pass, everybody's a fan, you know?
Yeah.
Like, because but it's the fact that
It's widespread news. Like, people that wouldn't have normally known about Doom, they now know about him, and they're like, let's find out about this. Let's see what this is about. You know, like, oh, right. He really was dope, blah, blah, blah. You know, so.
But it's, you know, it's funny because I feel like there's a difference, you know, where it's like you were saying, Chris, how, like, you know, I mean, and, you know, you're a hip hop head and, you know, you listen to music and everything, but there's only so many, like, artists that you can know and that you can fuck with and that can be, like, in your universe.
Yeah.
Right? So it's like, in your case, where you're just like, yeah, I didn't really, you know, fuck with him until some time later.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, I mean, you kind of came around to the dance and it's like, here you are, you know? Whereas, like, I don't know, I guess it's like, if you're, other than, you know what, though, it's funny because it's like, there's a certain, like, layer, there's a certain level of, like, I feel like a hip hop fan who, like, if you didn't know, like, you, I feel like you had to at least know who he was, right? Whereas I feel like there are people who are so removed from hip hop that we just have no idea who the fuck he is.
Yeah.
Right? And that's like, well, yeah, of course they're not going to fuck with him. Right. Like, if you are in the culture and you, you know, are a fan and a consumer of the product, then yeah, you're going to know who the hell he is. Like, especially if you're in like the New York area. Like,
yeah.
I mean, if you're from a product of the 90s or anywhere around that, like, you knew who he was. So, I don't know. I feel like he was such an acquired taste of just this human being who wore a mask all the time and did some really groundbreaking.
Very reclusive, very interesting person. I remember one of the first times I ever saw Doom on TV, he was doing something for Adult Swim. Like, it was like a promo thing where it was like Christmas with Doom. Ah. And now he had on a Christmas sweater. And he had the mask on. And he was, like, sleeping in a chair. Like, that was the promo commercial, and it was just hilarious. And, you know, he would do things like Chrome Children, and those albums would get released and sold on, like, Adult Swim and things like that. But when you really think about it, I heard about him through word of mouth. And I don't know if that's how you guys found out about Doom, but that's
how I found, yeah. Yeah.
The artist word of mouth or the actual coin of phrase word of mouth? I'm just fucking like, the rapper name word of mouth.
But yeah, like a friend would tell a friend, you know what I mean? Because there's a lot of people where if it doesn't come on TV, or remember when like video shows were a thing, when it was like Rap City and MTV, that would be how you got your hip hop. And you know, that's the floodgates and people control that. You know what I mean? So it's hard to consume all of hip hop because there are people that are very dope that never come that way. Doom was one of those people.
That's a great point because, like, you think about like this music and I think about, like, I found out from a friend, like, oh, you got to check out this guy, MF Doom. And I remember, so the day that everybody found out, they were posting on Instagram. One of my friends, she posted something. And I was like, I remember finding him out about him from your brother. And she was like, well, my sister told me about him. And I was like, oh, shit, that's what's up. And these were New York, like New York kids, New York friends. And I was like, OK, that's. And then it's when you say that, like you mentioned, like Video Jukebox and Rap City and all that stuff. It's like I remember Peach Fuzz. And that, like, my synapses went off. I was like, oh, that's the guy? That's the dude? That's KMD? So, like, that's one of the dudes from KMD. I was like, oh, shit, that's 91. I look it up. That's 1991. I remember that song playing on Video Jukebox all the time. I was like, oh, shit, that's that connection.
Yep, I saw that on Video Music Box.
Yeah.
And I remember in that video, Grand Poobah is in there playing the xylophone.
Shit. Oh. And that's crazy. That's one of the things that gives me solace that I hope to one day achieve when I die, where somebody can look back and say, like, would somebody like an MF Doom dies, it's like, it's sad for the people that loved him and his family and the people that loved his music, but there's a part of him that lives on. Like, it literally lives on, like, beyond his death. And that's, to me, like, that's a beautiful thing as an artist to leave that behind to inspire people. And it's just, like, it's amazing. Like, it's still a beautiful thing, although it's sad because, you know, it's one of those things.
He is 49 years old.
Yeah, young.
Yeah, dude. That's young.
Not that old.
Dude, man, like, he by no stretch should, like, have died.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I was going to say, and we don't really know. I mean, I don't know any sort of cause of death or, like, any of that sort of shit.
None of us know.
Yeah.
But that's what, like, and of course, like, that, like, if there was ever, like, a man who really lived a world of mystique, it's like you died on Halloween and no one knows how you died. Like, of course. Like,
yeah. People are saying call October 31st Doomsday now.
Oh, I would absolutely.
I'm with it. I'm so with it.
And I think was the comic, LA comic, Marcella Arguello said.
Arguello, yeah.
Arguello, she said, there's going to be a lot of sexy MF Doom costumes in October.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be the sexiest.
Yeah. It's one of those things, man. If you guys have any more to say, but Neil, just kind of touching on it's what you said a couple minutes ago. It is hard to consume all this shit. Like I had Tidal now for about maybe 3 years. And now I can have access to when people say, oh, check out this person. I can check it out. And I'm like, oh, that guy's pretty good. I was like riding my exercise bike a couple days ago. And I was like listening to Earl Sweatshirt. And then some other shit came up. I found out about this dude. Like, what the hell is his name? Some guy named Chewy. And this dude named Chewy, and he's got a guy that works with him. I'm sound like a dad. This kid named Chewy, and these kids named Chewy and Triz. I was like, oh, this shit sounds dope. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like and they've got tons of shit out. You know.
I was gonna piggyback off of that, and it's great that. You know, you can have a service and now have these things.
Right, right.
Rather than having to buy all of these albums.
Mm-hmm.
And you would just need a separate room for all of your albums because it's just that much. So it's great times that we live in where we can just press a button.
I think
and now we have thousands of songs, tens of thousands.
And, you know, that's, you know, I think that one of, as like an audiophile, like, one of the biggest like revolutions, I think, musically is that point of just like you can have 20,000 records in the palm of your hand, right? Like, I mean, you know, and this is, I guess, maybe because it's like lived experience of just like, yo, when I was like fucking 14 and I stepped out of the house and I had a mixtape, that was it. That's the only songs I had.
Yeah.
And within that space of just like, oh, I really want to hear that song again. Well, I'm going to have to rewind the tape.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So it's like to now get to the point where it's just like, yeah, you know, we can find it. And then, you know, 20,000 is even just a drop in the bucket, man. I mean, shit, you can stream millions of songs. So.
You sure can.
Anywho. Right.
Well, let's shift gears a little bit. I want to talk about that. That was great. I want to talk to you guys about what you liked this year, like what in hip hop excited you. I mean, I'll lead you guys off. I think for me, I've been saying this for months now, the Elzai album, 7 Times Down, 8 Times Up. I've been a fan of his for a long time, but it's almost like to me, it's like everything kind of came together on this project. It seemed like he's always had good stuff and I've always liked him, but just like there's been like there was this like cohesiveness that really things started to gel. And I really like that one. That's something I've been playing a lot. What about you, Jim? What about you?
Well, there's so much because, you know, I'm always like trying to listen to new shit and see.
Yeah.
But it's like I don't know how many picks do I get?
Whatever you want, man. Whatever. I just wanted to lead you guys off. That's sure.
All right. So, of last year, man. I mean, I feel like new. Well, not like new to me, but like I have to talk about Griselda. Like that's. Yeah. I mean, you know, upstate New York, fellow upstaters. I'm very sure. proud of that. I'll hammer that home. Buffalo, New York. Very pumped. You know, they've had this shit in a smash, and they are such incredible artists, and they really have elevated the game. And, you know, I mean, West Side's Who Made the Sunshine and Pray for Paris, you know, have been fucking great. From a King to a God, Conway's release. Mm-hmm. And Benny has, there's so many records they have that I'm just like, I don't know how to keep up.
And isn't it almost like everybody that's put something out has to have one of them on their joints, at least one of them on a record? Like I know, Freddie Gibbs had to with on Alfredo, which I love. Like I would say, Elzai and this Freddie Gibbs Alchemist project was fantastic, and like just like back to back with Bandana and now Alfredo, like. It's almost like this dude can't miss, but he had two guys, two of those dudes on the album.
That's another one, Freddie and Alchemist. Alfredo's unreal. You know, but so I would say Griselda, Stove God Cooks. Another upstater. I'm a little biased, but he's fucking amazing. Like out of nowhere. Like he really came out of just Reasonable Drought is such a dope album, man. So go get that. It's another great one. Who else? Vic Spencer. I can't speak enough of him, man. He's so fucking great. Out of Chicago. You know, I hate to compare like sounds of people and shit, but like imagine if like MF Doom met Redman and they like came together. I mean, he's obviously his own sound, but like he's just so great, man. He's such a great dude. Who else? Ural Droog has been one of my favorites. Like he's so great, man. And also a big stand-up comedy fan. You can hear it in his music. He's definitely one of those. One of those guys. A lot of the references are fucking great. And this guy, Rechi P, out of Jersey, he's a big polo enthusiast. a little biased on that. But he's really great too. He had, I just got into him, and he's got some really dope shit. So those are my new guys. Oh, shit. And then I'll stop talking. Makami. I cannot say enough about him, man. He's fucking great. He also has another very MF Doom-esque persona. Like, nobody knows anything about him, right? He always wears a mask. He's social distancing way before any of that. But he really, he has his own just unique sound, and I can't get enough of him. He's fucking amazing. He does a lot of collaboration with Ural Droog, too. So those are my guys. So go check all of them out and support them.
What about you, Neil?
Now, for me, you know, I hate to be the guy that's like, oh, I've just been pretty much listening to my things in the 90s, blah, 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 blah. But honestly, that's honestly what I've pretty much been doing. I'm not trying to be a hip hop purist or anything.
Yeah,
I've actually the newest thing that I've listened to, and this isn't even that new, was I was listening to Thundercat's latest album.
Oh my God! Well, I mean, not hip hop, but I'll take it. He was
right.
He was on Marin this week.
Oh, I need to definitely check that out.
It's really good.
I felt like he was another dude that was kind of MF Doom esque because he was kind of a weird dude.
Yeah,
but he makes good songs and good music because I got into like Fly Low a little bit.
Yeah,
I learned about him from all the years playing Grand Theft Auto 5. And then I learned that he had ties.
Before we end this, we got to talk about games.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
So then I learned that, you know, they were ties to, you know, MF Doom, Thundercat, And I just started listening to all that stuff. And I was like, oh, man, this is really, really dope. So, you know, I think the things that I had listened to before that, well, before things got weird in the pandemic, was I was listening to The All by Smith & Wesson. Mm-hmm. And I was listening to there was a mixtape that came out with Sean Price, 86 Witness. I was listening to that. And then I was listening to Igor by Tyler, the Creator.
I got to get back into that because that won the Grammy last year.
It did. It did. It was well done, man. It was.
You know, it's interesting to me because, like, I think about these dudes and these L.A. guys. Like, I've never been to L.A., but I feel like I have this kinship with them and I fucking get them. Like, for me, like, it was 2007 when Blue in Exile came out with Below the Heavens. And that just kind of, to me, I would say I'm going to be, how can I say, I'm not trying to be like Hilaria Baldwin. how do you say? It might be. I'm going to preface this by saying not commercial, but just like as far as quality is concerned, it might be one of the best hip hop debuts of the 21st century. Blue in Exile, Below the Heavens. Just it was such a wire to wire remarkable release, and it introduced me to, like, I mean, Miguel, before he blew up, was singing hooks on that, on some of those records. Just very personal. He was inspired by Common. So the two of those dudes, they put out a record called Miles, which I really liked when it came out earlier in the pandemic. I want to say, like, maybe 3 months in, maybe June or July it came out, and they had it was just like, oh, my God. Like, yeah, that's why I love these dudes. And so last week before, like, you know, New Year's, they did this socially distance thing on KEXP, which is like a radio station in Seattle. And they did like a live performance of some of those records. Like, yeah, these guys were out. Like, so much shit happened this year that you just kind of forgot. And I did literally buy the album and I was just like, fuck, yeah, like, these guys are good. And then that, you know, even though it's not hip hop, but it's kind of hip hop. You, like, you get into your, like, your Anderson Paaks, your Knowledge, like the KNX, you know, the, he spells it weird, like the production and stuff that they were doing together, like that whole Stone's Throw movement. That's just like, I feel like I fucking get those dudes, and they just kind of paint this picture of LA that just fascinates me with the way that they. Just the aesthetics, the sound, all of it. Just, I need to fucking get to L.A. when this is over.
Yeah, there's a scene here in L.A. I am not really near it like that because I am in Hollywood, yeah. Which is a vacuum of all things hip and black. But, you know, you go a little south to like Inglewood and Crenshaw, and then that's where you have, you know, that soulful scene.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like a lot of cool shit going on. What else? I'm thinking, like, yeah, I mentioned Freddie Gibbs, I mentioned Elzai. I'm trying to think, like, Joey Badass came out with that Light Pack EP. Like, it's just like, it's almost like, it's weird because it's like he's obviously the thing that I concern myself about. Like, I don't want to be that old dude that's like, these whippersnappers don't know anything. That's where I want to be. I don't want to be that dude, but it's like, it seems like the dudes that I'm enjoying, like these younger cats, like Joey Badass is like maybe 26, Earl Sweatshirt. Like, I'm liking those dudes. Like, I'm liking guys like that. But then what I want to ask you, you know, we're losing a lot of these kids, man. Like Pop Smoke. I don't know much of his work. But, you know, I watched Power. They played one. I Shazammed one of the songs because I'm old. And I'm like, oh, that's Pop Smoke. And it's like, the minute you get introduced to these guys, they're dead.
Well, you know what?
Did we have that many back then? Guys that died?
Here and there.
Tupac, Biggie, Big L, maybe?
Big L, Freaky Ta. You know, so I mean, like, I think that we did, you know.
Those were just the high profile ones.
That's what I'm saying. Like, sure, there's the high profile ones. And then, you know, there's definitely got to be other artists, because it's like, you know, it's a different strata, man. Like, some of these guys get caught up in some shit that it's just like, you know, they live a different life. So, you know, I don't know if it's, I don't think it's more now than it was back then.
Okay. It just seems,
I feel like it's more, it feels like it's more prevalent because of social media and things like that.
Yeah.
You know, but you also have to think about the image of hip hop. And, you know, it's for the most part rooted in crime and the stories of the street. Like, that's what this is, you know? And a lot of times, like, there'd be rappers that had beef and they would even say it now that they're older. They'd be like, yeah, we had a problem, but mostly we kept it on wax.
Yeah.
And that's something that, you know, the newer guys, you know, aren't really doing as much.
Yeah.
Because they're kind of like, yo, it's on site. If I see you at the club and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, things like that tend to happen.
Because I remember, like, not too long ago, like, there was some OG that was just like, all these guys are just, these kids, they're just taking pills now. I mean, even you could say, like, J. Cole, like, he did that album. What's the album? Kids. Oh, shit. Come on, Chris. Wow. Kids on Drugs. K.O.D. Is that it? J. Cole?
Could be.
Come on, guys. K.O.D. Yeah, Kids. Well, that K.O. It is K.O.D. And it's like, okay, all these kids, like, they're super talented, but now they're just taking drugs. But they're also killing each other. Like, they'll shoot you.
Right.
So it's like... Yeah, it's just like the minute you start to be like, oh, that's a good song, and you find out this kid's dead. Like, right. There was
Extentation. I didn't really know about him like that.
Yeah.
Until he was dead. You know?
Until you heard Dina Hashim make that joke that
whoops. Yeah, that brought it to the comedy community.
Yeah. That was Go ahead, Jim.
This is maybe this is kind of a half cooked idea, but we'll see if it floats. But, like, I wonder if, like, because, again, I feel like there was a certain generation when we came up, when folks started to die, everyone was like, whoa, y'all need to chill.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like, look, we're all getting paid from this, right? Like, we are living the dream. Like, we are making money, legal money.
Right.
Like, the feds cannot kick our door in for selling music. Right. Unless you're, oh God, I can see his face. DJ Drama, when they try to catch him on some bullshit. They really, like, they fucked with him. And it was a bullshit charge.
But put a pin in that real quick. Did you guys listen to any of those NPR podcasts about hip hop? Oh, okay. Well, never
mind. Is it worth a listen?
It's worth checking out. I part of me, I want to, if you do get a hold of it, I want to know what you think about it. Because it's kind of like, I get what they're doing and it is cool, but it's like, who are you guys doing this for? Are you doing it for white people? Are you doing, because it's NPR, maybe I'm just kind of like, maybe hating a little bit, but I don't know. It feels.
I will send me the link. I definitely want to take a listen to it.
Same, definitely.
I got to remember what the hell the name is. Okay, keep talking. Talk.
So here's where I was going with it. Is that, like, when Biggie and Pac died, which again was, like, related to music, right? I feel like there was that. Obviously, that was the connection, right? East Coast, West Coast beef, etc. And then everyone kind of was like, yo, like, we are making a lot of money off this, so what the fuck are we fighting about? And we all look the same. This seems kind of stupid. And so I think there was, and again, we'll see what it goes, but I think there was a measure of appreciation for the success that people were getting. Whereas now I feel like, not that it's not earned, because I think that anybody who gets the success that they get, you can't literally, like, in all senses of the word, you cannot put out just one song on SoundCloud and then have everybody find it. Like, that's not realistic. Like, you have to do a body of work for people to find you, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Right, right.
However, I do think that there is a measure, I sound so old right now, but I think today that there isn't a level of appreciation of just like, whoa, like, I'm here. I can now move my mom out the hood. I can spend $40,000 on a house or whatever. I can move my family places and shit, right? Yeah. Well, I don't know. I haven't talked to them, but it's just like, I just don't know if there's that level of appreciation for what they have, which is why they throw it away. And that's why they will fucking get into just mindless beef. That it's just like, yo, man, like, yeah, I'm not saying you should back down and be a fucking coward on shit. Like, if someone's got a problem with you, you should address it. However, like, if you got a chance to walk away, then use it. You have to, like, mm-hmm. I mean, that's growing up, right? Like, you learn the battles that you pick, and you learn, like, all right, this one I fight, this one I let slide. So, I think that might, and obviously there's so much in that, in that equation of why that is, but I think that's in part. I really do. I think that
we saw that. It's just being a, right. And it's just being an older guy. You just want to see these kids prosper. And it's like the minute that you find out about this kid that's really talented, like, he's dead. And it's like, fuck, man. It's like, you're on the right track. Well, this NPR podcast is called Louder Than a Riot. And it is good because it was informative to me. But it's almost like, but I think the people behind it are righteous with it. Like, I'm going to go on record and say I think they are. Like, but it's just, it's just almost like, you know, when white folks get around, it's like, but I just think that's the platform that they got, and they're rocking with it. Cause shit, I didn't know that much about Bobby Shmurda before. Right. I just knew he's in jail. But when you find out about the other side of it, who was affected by it, like, who doesn't have a son anymore or a boyfriend anymore? It's like, well, fuck, man, you know, this is really, you know,
there's so much trauma around that, man.
Like, yeah.
About, like, the level of, like, unprocessed trauma that, like, our community faces on the reg. Like, I mean, to have, like, and this is even outside of music, but it's just like, yo, look, you know, your dad may be there one day, and then he might be gone for 5 to 7 years.
Yeah.
You know, mom might be here, and then she might be fucking killed by the police. Like, there's so much of that shit that just goes on every day that I'm just like, that's why black people need to go to therapy. All right.
It's just kind of like what, like, that you mentioning that made me think about Moonlight. The fact that, like, it fucked a lot of people up, where the Mahershala Ali character is there in the first part and he's not there anymore in the next half. And it's like, we know why he's not there, but it's like some people was just kind of like jarring for him to not be there, and then to deal with the repercussions of him, you know, kind of just his character not being there. Before I let you go, guys, Neil, you're a gamer, right?
Oh, big time. That is, you know, before the pandemic, it's helped me out a lot. But the getting me through the pandemic, yeah, I definitely kept my sanity.
Now, you've been an evil Xbox guy, right?
Yeah, I'm one of those. I definitely am. For years, I've been on the Microsoft side of things, and, you know, I haven't been on the Sony side.
Mm-hmm.
But I always felt that Xbox, to be fair, had the more powerful system and the better network,
but not the better games.
PlayStation had the better games. Yeah, Sony had the better games.
Yeah. I've always been a Sony guy. What have you been playing? Because I think I talked to Brian McGinnis or maybe Jeff Cerulli, both friends of the podcast, but I think they said you were going to switch to Sony soon.
Yeah, I was going to, but, you know, I can't find a PS5 anywhere. Yeah,
I can't either, dude. Apparently, there was a drop on GameStop yesterday, but I missed it.
And you have to be quick on these things because there are machines, there are bots buying them all up and then reselling them for double, triple the price. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, you know what? These consoles were just released. There aren't really that many titles yet.
Yeah.
So I can stand to wait a year or a year and a half, whatever, for these consoles to be plentiful. But I'm not going to go out my way to get them. So I'm still on the fence. I was planning to get a PS5 to maybe game with those guys. But, you know, it is what it is. So right now, I've still been gaming on my Xbox One.
And what have you been playing?
Playing my Nintendo Switch as well, which can't scoff at that either. It's a great system. I've been playing, for the most part, Destiny 2.
Okay.
I'm a big, big Destiny fan, so I've been in it since part one. So I'm playing Destiny 2. I'm playing Grand Theft Auto 5. And I also tend to play Division 2 a lot. Those are the three games that I've been playing a lot.
I was talking
to FPS.
I was talking to my buddy about, like, I played the demo of Division, and it was really cool. But it was like one of those first games where you have to build yourself up like an RPG. Yeah. You can't just have a machine gun. You have to upgrade that gun.
Right. And
I was playing. Have you played Control? Have you heard of that?
I haven't played it. It's
not the same thing because there's a supernatural element, but like there is like a thing to it where you're upgrading your weapons, upgrading your guns, and all that.
Right.
But it made me think of Division because I was talking to a buddy, like a friend of mine one of my like closest friends, and we were talking about that. I was like, oh, Division. He was like, yeah, going off on how insane it is.
Now, the story with Division was pretty amazing. And Division 1 is set in New York, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they're having a pandemic, this is years before any of this happened in 2020. Yeah. And it was like a dollar flu. Like it was like they infected some dollar bills and they went out to like a Black Friday event. And it was like a biochemical weapon, bioengineered chemical weapon. And it spread to the population and New York pretty much fell. Right. And then a lot of insane things happened. Like you had these radical groups taking over the city, like the cops gone. They let all the inmates out of Rikers Island, and they became a terrorist group, right? This is amazing. They call themselves the Rikers, and they're out there killing cops and doing all types of crazy things, right? The garbage men start revolting, and they start using flamethrowers to kill anyone infected, and they call themselves the Cleaners.
Damn.
Now you have inmates and garbage men walking around just delivering their own justice in New York, and you as an agent, it's your job to clean up these streets.
Wow.
Now, fun as hell, Chris.
My listeners are going to roll their eyes that I'm and I say for their pleasure, it should just be a drinking game, but that reminds me of one of the most incredible video game series of all time, The Last of Us.
Part one. Really good. I always wanted to play it. Yeah.
It's incredible, but it's a similar thing like a plague, and there's all these different factions that you're dealing with, and then part two, a lot of things come to head, and it's an incredible series. It's really good to get kind of engrossed in that world, in a world like that. I just downloaded the Miles Morales Spider-Man game last night. I haven't played it yet, but it's really a reasonable.
Stunning.
Yeah, it's really a reason. I have the PS4 Pro. I haven't gotten the 5 yet, but it's essentially a reasonable facsimile of the 2018 Spider-Man, which is incredible.
Yeah,
kind of like it's just like, but it's black, you know?
So right.
I'm excited to get into that. Yeah.
I just two things I have to say. One is that if my mom were to hear this conversation, like let's say she was in a time machine and I brought her from like 1985 when I was playing. No, I'm gonna say 88. I was 7 years old, and that was a diehard video game.
Yeah.
just like, video games are the wave of the future. She'd be like, that is bullshit. These things are stupid. No one's ever going to fuck with them, because she was not the biggest video game fan. To bring her today to now hear adults.
Yeah.
Yep. Fully invested in what I was years ago, she would lose her shit. Which then brings me to my second point of, like, akin to hip hop, is we are now, and we've seen it forever, right? But I feel like there's an overlap in that, like, we have seen the maturation of video game user, right? Just like we're seeing the maturation of hip hop listener.
Absolutely. Like,
video games as a whole are what, 40 years old, we'll say, maybe 50. So they have now grown with the user.
Yeah.
Like, for God's sakes, like, you know, look, I stopped playing. I think the last system I had was like a PS3, maybe, I want to say.
That's so pretty recent. Not that, you know, it's pretty recent.
I want to say either three or two. And it was, I was like a Grand Theft Auto nut. Like, I loved that game so much. Yeah. It was fucking dope. But, like, that was probably, like, the last game that I played that, like, yeah, was fucking real. And that was, like, I mean, the graphics and everything, it was adult content, et cetera. The off chances that I see what the graphics look like now, all cliches aside, like, I've seen basketball games that have, like, just quick glances. I'm like,
yeah,
real game. Like,
right.
But, like, quick glance, I'll go, like, oh, that's a game. Oh, that's not.
It's like when your mom or dad is walking by the TV and you're like, oh, that's, I didn't know there was a basketball game on. It's
right.
Me playing the game, Mom.
Yeah. It's a video game that you don't understand.
Yeah.
Take me to the mall in 2 hours. Leave me alone. All right. Yeah. Chad, take it easy.
Yeah, buddy. It's a big part of entertainment. It's like it's huge. And my listeners know that with the rollout of The Last of Us Part Two, there was so much drama involved with the delays with COVID. And this was the most unprecedented release, like following it, you know, just being excited about it. It's insane. Like I have, you know, a buddy of mine that's been on the show before. Shout out to Tajay Moment. He's like, he's never experienced anything like this. Granted, he's 20 years old, 20, 21. Mm-hmm. But it's like I mean, I just remember, oh, this game's coming out. I'm going to dad, take me to Toys R Us. Yeah. You know, but this is like, you got the internet, like, and Neil, you referenced like the advent of social media. It's right. just more intensity around all this stuff where I felt like I didn't need to be involved in all this, but it's kind of fascinating to watch it unfold, you know?
Yeah, it's a very big deal. I mean, a lot of these game releases, they make more than like a movie release.
Yeah.
Like it's a ridiculous amount of money.
No shit.
$1 billion industry.
Yep.
And I can only imagine how high the numbers are, you know, within the past year, you know, because of COVID. That's one of the reasons why you can't really find a PS5.
No.
Where it's like, you know,
Nintendo Switches are hard to find, but the crowning achievement is finding a PS5 or a Xbox Series X, because they're just sold out everywhere. And they're just hard to come by.
Yeah. Well, look, guys, this, I don't want to hold you guys too long. This has been fucking great. This is.
Oh, it's always a pleasure, man.
This exceeded my expectations.
Good.
It exceeded my expectations. But let's just say I was just super excited to talk to you guys. You know, I got my alcohol. And I was just like super excited to talk to you guys. Plug your podcast and anything, like, if there's any, you know, you mentioned like stuff that you were listening to, but like anything that you like that maybe we should be out on the lookout for or what have you. So just whatever you want to do, the floor is yours.
All right.
You can start, Jim. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, you're going to hear the plug twice because that podcast is just as nice. But Swatches and Boomboxes is the dopest 90s hip hop podcast in these motherfucking streets. You can find that wherever you get podcasts. Also, you can find us at swatchesandboomboxes@gmail.com. All social media, we're at Swatches and Boomboxes, except for Twitter. We are Swatches and Boom. But yeah, download, rate, review, subscribe on that front. I have a podcast called Open Bar Talk with Jim Search, is where I interview bartenders from around the universe, and they have some really fucked up wild stories. That's a really fun show. You should download that one as well. And that one also, openbartalk@gmail.com, and anywhere that you find podcasts. If you like listening to my voice, which, and I mean, how can you not? I mean, this is just velvet on air. Let's be real. No, I'm just kidding. But if you want to find me personally, jimsearchcomedy.com, and all social media at jimsearch. I post a lot about Western beef and my haters, because sometimes you have a few. But that's it for me.
Cool. Neil, how about you, sir?
Well, not to be redundant, but if you love 90s hip hop, you know, obviously swatches and boom boxes. It's amazing. Now, I mentioned before, well, if you want to check me out, you can check me out on neilcharles.com. I have a few things there. There are no show dates because I am not performing live in a pandemic.
Whoa, you mean you're not doing any shows? You're not doing any indoor shows?
Where's your grind, man? Why aren't you grinding?
Absolutely not.
You could spread
but I mean, channel. I do post things. I do, you know, I have done a few Zoom shows. So feel free to like follow me on Instagram and Twitter. I barely use that, but Instagram is better. And you can find me on that as at Certified Hilarious. I just remembered, I don't know if I said this wrong, but the podcast that I was a guest on and talking about was Crystal Adams's Black Card Rehab. Okay. And that was a really good podcast, and a big fan of our show, and he's also been a guest on our show, Mr. Tayrell 713.
Yeah,
we love that guy. We love
he's a Cleveland Tayrell guy, 713. Right?
Yes, he is, and he has an amazing podcast. And the last time I was here, I shouted it out. The Skim Pod stays okay. Crunchy and milk. Awesome, awesome podcast.
I follow him. We follow each other on Instagram.
Good. Yeah. I'm glad, because I like when my friends
he's know never each invited other. Me on this show, but whatever.
Well, I haven't been on it either. Nah, but, you know. But also, do you know Celeste Joseph Jennings?
I think I know her through doing your show that was in Brooklyn.
That was ages ago at Eve's Lounge. I did have you guys on the same night.
Yes.
Yeah. That was purposely done because I kind of like when my friends become friends.
Yeah. I know she was cool, but I just don't know her.
Oh, okay. Okay. Because cool. I can make that introduction because, you know, that's what I do. Sometimes what I'll do is I'll make a Facebook message and put a bunch of my friends in there and be like, hey, this is so-and-so. And that is so-and-so. You guys should know each other and collaborate on things. She has an amazing podcast called Baroness and Fletch that she does with her brother Daniel, and it's a lot of fun.
All right. So,
you know, cool. So I plug everything. I don't just plug my own things, but thank you for having me, Chris.
Yeah.
This is always a pleasure, guys, to talk to you. Thank you so much for doing this. I appreciate you guys, and we will talk to you, or at least I will. I'll talk to you next time. Take it easy, everybody.